Okay, the Andy Finn Show is back, and on this day, in 1893, the very first auto was built in the United States. It was built by the Duryea brothers, and I'm sorry, when I say it was built, it was the first time they ran it in Springfield. Of course, there's a Springfield in virtually every town in the country, every state in the country, so I don't know if that's Springfield, Illinois, or Springfield, New Jersey, or where it is. They didn't say, and I didn't look it up. And in 1868, on September 22nd, we had race riots in New Orleans. So I guess we had a large black population there at the time, although these race riots could have been, I was going to say they could have been the French, but no, 1868, you could be pretty sure 3 years after slavery was ended, after the Civil War ended, that would have been race riots with black citizens. And 1863, on this date, Abraham Lincoln issued his Emancipation Proclamation. Big time. Okay, let me continue with some of the stuff from Hurricane Katrina. And there's some good news here. Fewer children are actually missing than they thought. You know, there was a report a week or 10 days ago that there were 3,600 children missing. Missing was probably too strong a word. Misplaced or separated from their parents would have been better, because missing makes it sound like nobody has seen these kids and we don't have any idea where they are. In fact, it turns out now that they've got websites and databases and people searching and trying to hook people up, about a quarter of those have already been reattached to their parents or to one parent, so that they're solving the problem, and they don't believe there's anywhere near as many literally missing. It's just that they're misplaced. They got separated from their parents. You know, I was thinking about this, and I said, you know, there is no way I would let myself get separated from a child, even a teenager, during a disaster like this. But I guess if you're getting on a helicopter and you're taking them up one or two at a time, and they take them up to the helicopter, it'd be possible that they'd take up your kids first, and then you go to get on, and the helicopter's full, and they fly it off, and you end up getting on the next helicopter, and who knows where that would leave you. But just in general, I'd be very clear with any rescuers that they needed to keep my family together. But I guess in the hubbub of it all, those things happened. The statement that George Bush made a while back, about 10 days ago, last show, 2 weeks ago, I talked about the four boners that Bush stated, and Mike and I voted on which one was the worst. But in the running was his statement that New Orleans is going to rebuild. I don't have the exact quote in front of me right now, but he basically said, New Orleans is going to rebuild, and we are going to have a new, vibrant New Orleans and Gulf Coast region. He said, and Trent Lott's house is going to be rebuilt. Of course, he had a nice palatial place right on the Gulf, and it got flattened. And he said, Trent Lott's house is going to get rebuilt, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch. Well, wrong thing to say, Mr. Bush, because Trent Lott, you'll notice, is not hanging out at the Houston Astrodome. Trent Lott has another nice place right back here in Washington, D.C. And so Trent Lott isn't really hurting. He's got to deal with some insurance matters and all. But that got me thinking about something, because you hear this talked about now. If you listen to Intelligent Talk Radio, you'll hear this issue discussed, and that is, why should we rebuild Trent Lott's home? Or more properly, why should we rebuild everything that was there? First of all, New Orleans has some tough decisions to make because so much of it is below sea level. The question is, do you go and you put housing and buildings right back in that part of the New Orleans bowl that's so far below sea level that if it gets flooded, it's in deep trouble? But also, these other houses, like Trent Lott's house, like the casinos that are right on the Gulf Coast, you know, about half the people, or maybe it's 2/3 of the people, don't have flood insurance. Right. In some cases, you can't actually get it, so they rely on the government-covered policies to do it. But even then, many people, two-thirds, don't get the insurance. And yet, when their houses get flattened, we come in and we bail them out. We help them out because it's a total loss, and you can't have that. People need help. But it's a mistake to help people to rebuild if you know that in 30 years or so, another Category 4 or better hurricane is going to come through there again. The odds are it'll come through again and flatten those same houses. Why should the people be allowed to take that risk, enjoy the beautiful view, have their property values go up, knowing that the country will bail them out again when the next hurricane comes through? And it's not if, it's when the next one comes through. You know, it's the same with the mudslides in California or the forest fires in California or Nevada. On the edges of forests, they build these neighborhoods in the sprawling suburbs, in the, you know, the high desert areas of L.A. or wherever, knowing that if a fire comes through, there's nothing you can do. Or in the case of building houses on these hillsides for these spectacular views, if it rains hard enough, the mud slides start and these houses go sliding down the mountain. And of course, in those cases, the land is gone. You know, people built houses on those hillsides. They paid for that land and the hillside collapses, the mud slides down. Well, they cart the mud away. That property is non-existent anymore. So those people aren't going to rebuild there. But the question is, why were they allowed to build there in the first place? And then why are they covered by insurance if you know these kinds of things are likely to happen? So I just think there are hard questions. I'm not saying we know what we're going to do. But when people want to rebuild in these areas and you know you're going to have trouble, they should assume more of the risk. The U.S. government should not pick up a big share of this. And it should be clear that next time they are much more on their own. And I don't know if we're going to be smart enough to do that. But I sure hope we are. In any case, there's a congressional probe planned now, and a couple of interesting things about this. It's a big flap between the Republicans and Democrats, but the Republicans are in both the House and the Senate are in the habit of not consulting the Democrats about a lot of things. They decide what they want to do, and then they announce it. And they expect the Democrats to go along because the Democrats are the minority. Well, the Democrats do have roughly half the seats in the House and Senate. You know, it's 55-45 in the Senate. It's closer than that in percentage terms in the House. But the Republicans have been running roughshod over them pretty much on a lot of decisions. And the Democrats just are not even in on this on a lot of the legislation that's formulated. So the Republicans got together and decided they were going to do a bipartisan committee through Congress. Well, a lot of Democrats are calling for an independent investigation, like the 9/11 commission. And the Republicans announced they were going to have a standard kind of committee, which means more Republicans than Democrats, and with Republicans calling most of the shots. Well, the Democrats said, nothing doing. You'll whitewash this. If there is whatever blame there is to assign to the federal government, to FEMA, to Homeland Security, to Bush, you guys won't investigate it, right? Because they have not shown any inclination to investigate the Bush administration. There are any number of things that have come up. WMD and the misuse of the intelligence to get us into Iraq being the biggest example that should have had a bipartisan investigation and was essentially whitewashed. Not the intelligence itself. We looked at that, but how the Bush administration used intelligence. They were very careful in the Republicans in Congress to stay away from those issues. So when they announced this committee, the Democrats said, nothing doing, we're sitting it out. So the Republicans got ready to name their members, and the Democrats said, we're not naming anybody. You have your committee by yourself. And so two things have happened in the last week. First, Bill Frist decided that the House and Senate will do this separately. They were going to do a a joint committee between the two houses. And now they're going to do it individually. In fact, the Senate is not going to go ahead because since the Democrats aren't willing to nominate anyone for the committee, the Republicans aren't going to go ahead with it because it would be kind of a sham committee. This is in the Senate. That never stops the House, though. Remember, the House where the Republicans were the ones who promised the Democrats that they just wanted to investigate Clinton and the Lewinsky affair, that they would not pursue impeachment on a partisan basis. They would not pursue it unless there was bipartisan support. Of course, there wasn't bipartisan support, and they pushed ahead anyway, primarily through the pushing of people like Tom DeLay and other people that just decided to go ahead with it and that they'd be able to get Clinton out of office that way. So yesterday, Wednesday, the 21st of September, House Speaker Denny Hastert named 11 Republican lawmakers to the committee that the Republicans expected to be a bipartisan investigation, but now is going to have 11 Republican House members on it, and it's just going to be a House investigation. And so my representative, Tom Davis of Virginia, was chosen as the chair, and they're going to start next week. On Tuesday, they're going to question Michael Brown, the fellow that resigned as head of FEMA after it was found out he was incompetent and actually not qualified to be given that job. As a political appointee, he was handed that, and people said, how much trouble can he get in FEMA? And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. My own prediction is that the Republicans, the Senate knows better than to carry on with this farce. I don't know what the Democrats will do as this goes on, but I do know that the Republicans are going to look sillier and sillier because they don't really have a serious investigation. So if they're too easy on both, people will laugh and just say, what did you expect? It's only Republicans. And so will that encourage them to be tough on Bush? Probably not, actually. They'll probably just take it easy on him. They'll blame FEMA. They'll blame Michael Brown. Maybe Chertoff, although if Chertoff is still in, which he looks like he's going to be, they probably won't blame him. Maybe we can blame it all on Private Lindy England. She's going to be court-martialed anyway, it looks like. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see. I think before this is over, we will get an independent commission. I think the Democrats holding out for it are the reason we will get it. And I just don't think that what the Congress is currently doing will stand up to scrutiny. And as more information comes out about how all this was handled, including the strength of the levies, all of that, I think we'll see an independent commission eventually. These things take time. You would think it would be obvious right now if the Democrats are balking and saying we won't cooperate, that somebody would say, okay, well, that means we are going to need an independent commission. We got to play nice or else we're going to have to farm it out. But these things take time. The other side thinks it can have its way for now. Both sides think they can have its way. It'll take a while for this to sort itself out, but probably not that long. I think the anger over this is going to be such that no Republican, no Democrat is going to want to get caught looking like they're stonewalling an investigation or looking like they're playing politics. So we'll see how that plays out. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Operation Offset, the congressional plan to see that there's cuts corresponding to the money we spend. Operation Offset sounds like a military operation. You know, it'd be the closest a lot of these congressmen ever got to the military.
I heard you telling your friends how he's harmless enough. There's almost nothing you could have said that would have hurt me so much. But how to risk all you got? Oh, I forget you forgot. Or you'd see that harmless is one thing I'm most certainly not. It's all foolish.